email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, I went for a run this morning with Eddie Mullins, and Eddie is the CEO of Merchants Quay Ireland, and this month is Recovery Month, September, and Eddie is running 5K every day along with people in the public eye, and he wants to raise awareness about the work that Merchants Quay do and to help people in their journey of recovery out of addiction. And Eddie joins me now after a shower in studio. Good afternoon, Eddie.
Good afternoon, Ray. Thanks very much for having me on today.
Yeah. So a 5K a day for the month of September.
5K a day for the month of September.
Right. And it's not about charity. You're not raising funds or anything.
Well, we're always raising funds,
yes,
but this
yes.
is about awareness. This
okay.
is about recovery, you know, and celebrating recovery in many respects, but also highlighting the need for greater investment in recovery services, because we know recovery works. Mm. You know, we know when a person who is in maybe the depths of drug dependency or addiction, and when they're supported through that journey to recovery, they can transform their lives, and they do transform their lives. So
you've opened up your contact book. And
yeah.
So you've loads of people, have you? You've obviously 30 people.
30 people, Ray. Amazing. Obviously delighted that yeah. you started today. Well, it was really honoured to have you there. One thing I noticed when we finished the run, the sweat was rolling down my face and I looked at you and there wasn't a bead of sweat and you said, oh my God, I'm with the wrong person. But no, it was great to have you today.
Yeah.
I ran with Eoin O'Riordan yesterday. Eoin was a pioneer in terms of drug strategy when he was minister. I'm running with potentially the next president of Ireland, Jim Gavin,
right.
next week. I'm running with the Minister for Justice, several politicians, a group of guards from Store Street, a group of healthcare workers from the Banner Hospital, some of the Kerry All-Ireland football winners, some of your colleagues from RTE, Brendan Courtney,
yeah.
and also Brian O'Connell from
yes.
the Clareborn Show. So there's a variety of people
okay.
running, and my own GAA club and various people. And they're all running for the same reason, because they do believe in this concept of supporting people
okay.
in recovery.
Merchants Quay Ireland then.
Yeah.
So we assume that people know what it is, but I don't think everybody does. They hear the name bandied about. So give us the history then.
Yeah. So that's a very good point, because Merchants Quay, for a lot of people, they identify Merchants Quay as Riverbank on the Quays, and it's a much bigger organisation than that. Set up about 40 years ago with Tony Gagan would have been the main man at the front of it, and Father our Friar Brian Casson as well, or Sean Casson. And it was set up because in the inner city, the South inner city, around 40 years ago, there was an emerging homeless crisis. And it was primarily men who were possibly in addiction, primarily around alcohol. And it was to give a space to those people to come in and have a cup of tea and a sandwich, and really started up with very humble beginnings. And then, of course, as the drugs crisis started to emerge, and heroin was a big problem in the 80s and early 90s, HIV associated with heroin, intravenous drug use. So there was a lot of people in the South Inner City in particular diagnosed with HIV, and they were really treated in many respects like lepers. You know, people didn't know how to work with people with HIV. So Merchants Quay developed a service to support people with HIV. They could come in to Riverbank, and it was a non-judgment, a very safe space for people to come and access services, access food, showers, a GP. And our services evolved over the years then, and we developed two residential recovery programmes, one in High Park and Drumcondra and one in Tullow in County Carlow. We have a detox programme. We provide addiction counselling to people in prison, in all of our prisons, and we family support and supports throughout the country, the southeast, the northeast, Cavan, Monaghan, the Midlands, and it's a really extensive range of services. So when people think of Merchants Quay and they think of Riverbank, which obviously a lot of people in Dublin do, you know, bear in mind that we have a lot more to offer and a lot more supports for people at whatever part of addiction or homelessness they're in. So if you go to Riverbank, for example, you'll see people who are really in the depths of drug dependency. And it's a very stark place. You were there this morning, you saw it yourself. It's a very difficult place, and you see people in really difficult circumstances. You go down to Tullow and you see people in St. Francis Farm, as the name of our service, and you see all that hope and energy and a transition from a person. And so many of the people in St. Francis Farm will tell you that their first engagement with Merchants Quay was in Riverbank, when they really had nowhere else to go. But it's so I suppose, enriching to see them moving on.
Can I ask you a question? Because you encounter all these people, and you would have encountered people suffering from addiction in your work in Mountjoy as well. Can you, as a human being, separate the person from the addiction when you meet them first?
You can't. You know, it's funny. When I put my prison officer hat on when I was training many, many years ago, we were always told to park your biases and park your opinions and treat people with respect and dignity in prison. It was really a core principle in the prison system. And our prison system is a very humane system because of that, I would say, which is, you would say that. But and it's the same principle when you meet people who are in drug dependent or in the depths of addiction, because it can be a difficult relationship. You know, so you're talking to a person who is really, you know, has suffered deep trauma and recurring trauma, and can be hard to engage with. So you have to park your own opinion. You meet that person where they're at, and you take it at the pace they're at. And sometimes we would, you know, you'd often hear you'd like to shake somebody. Yeah. That doesn't work. You don't do that kind of thing. You just have to take the person where they're at. And I suppose my mother, you know, passed away a number of years ago, and she was a very religious woman. But she had a saying that she would say all the time, "There go I, but for the grace of God." Yes. We've heard it so many times. But it is true. I mean, there's no question about it. Addiction hits so many families. Some families are hit, you know, much more by it. So when you've poverty and when you're living in poverty or trauma or abuse or any sort of deprivation, and addiction on top of that makes it a really, really difficult situation. But it doesn't really have a postcode. It can hit, you know, anybody at any time.
Well, you're more likely...
Disproportionately,
it affects people in lower socioeconomic
Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk about the medical injection facility, because I suppose you have been in the news over the last number of years because of this.
Yeah.
So tell people what it is. Just remind people what it is.
Yeah. So the medical supervised injection facility was part of government policy. The last national drug strategy and the current national drug strategy, the one that's in development, are very focused on harm reduction measures. So it's a harm reduction measure. It was championed by Éan O'Riordan 9 years ago. Took a long, long time to get there. Funded by the HSE and very supported by the HSE. The HSE are very, very, they work very closely with us around training and around development and monitoring this facility, because everybody wants it to work. But effectively what it is a person who injects drugs, who would have done so on the street, can now do so under the supervision of a medical team. And what that does is, number one, it gives that person some dignity. Because if you will be very familiar with the streets of Dublin, where you would see people taking drugs, you'd see people primarily now smoking crack cocaine. But there was a time when a lot of people would be injecting on the drugs. It's a very, very distressing situation, both for the person who's observing it, but more so for the person who's doing it. They don't want to be on full display injecting drugs. So this facility now provides an opportunity for a person to come in off the street and meet with our project workers and inject in a safe environment. And I suppose the key objective, so when the HSE first mooted the idea of a medically supervised injection facility, it was to save lives.
Okay.
Because there were overdoses happening where people were unattended, and unfortunately we lost many people. And if you look back at the statistics, and I hate to use the word statistics when you're talking about people, but in 2021, the last published figures, there were 354 overdose deaths, drug poisoning deaths. You know, that's almost one a day. You know, so when you look at it, it was a very significant problem.
So it's harm reduction.
It's harm reduction.
Now, will you just remind us, and this is going to be difficult for you, will you remind us about the arguments against a medical injection facility in Dublin?
So
the general ones and the specific ones.
Sure. So the very commonly mooted arguments against a medically supervised injection facility or any sort of a consumption room is people will think it's enabling drug use.
Okay.
So you'll have a strong argument. You'll have a lot of people saying that you're encouraging people to take drugs. And I suppose at the very outset, I'd say, like, my colleagues, more so than me, because I'm in a role where I'm not frontline all the time, but my colleagues see every day the devastation caused by drug use. Right? And we do not advocate, we would never recommend anybody to use drugs. But we live in the real world and we see people and we see the cause and the impact drug use has on both them personally, their families, their communities. And we know that shunning the problem or pushing the problem away and pretending it doesn't exist will not resolve this issue.
Okay.
And like one of our objectives when a person comes into the medically supervised injection facility, when we've done the basics, so we've supported that person who's injected, we've monitored them to make sure they haven't overdosed, we then have an opportunity to have a conversation.
To engage.
To see what life could look like for that person. Mm. Now, we're not naive. Some people are not interested. They will come in. Their sole focus is on taking their drugs. But there's always a chink. You know, you met a guy this morning yourself. You got that sense of the conversation.
Yeah.
You know, now, if he's out on the street and he can't engage with us, we've no hope of bringing that guy on a journey.
So I was there this morning. I met Bernadette, who's on reception. So people have to present their drugs, which is people.
Bizarre.
They'll think that sounds bizarre. So you can't get in unless you have drugs.
Yeah.
Illegally acquired drugs. Because they have to know what you're going to take.
Yeah.
And then they go in and, as you say, they're medically supervised. There's little alcoves. There's tarpaulin, which, you know, made me feel a little bit uneasy. It's a very sad place.
Yeah.
And then we went into the room off where people inject, and I met that person, and they'd been using the facility since it was opened in December, and they were singing its praises, and they were saying that they knew at least three or four people that wouldn't be alive
without it. Yeah.
But all very sad. I think it's all very sad that you know how drug abuse ravages through people's lives.
There's nothing to celebrate about drug use. You know, there's nothing happy about it. But what I would say is, like the chap that we spoke to this morning, the alternative for him not having that safe space, not being able to sit and have a cup of tea and relax. Like he spoke, we asked him how did he sleep? And he said he was couch surfing.
He said he didn't sleep last night.
No. Yeah.
And he might sleep on Wednesday.
Absolutely. Yeah. So like that is an incredible pressure on a person. And, you know, when you try and maybe rationalise why some people take drugs, you very quickly find out that it's traumatic events in their lives. It's in some ways, it's escaping from the misery of what they've endured for so many, many years. So penalising them and criminalising them even more is never going to take a person to a place where life could be better. So while it is a sad place, we see so many elements of positivity in that facility where, like, I'll give you an example. On about the second day we opened, was a guy came in and he was very, obviously, people were very cautious and very cagey about using the facility in the very beginning. He came in, kind of distant, didn't want to engage some of the staff. But one of our nurses copped something very quick. She said that, you know, something wasn't quite right here. And I'd be, without being too graphic, it was in relation to a smell. So she knew it was a very bad smell. And she took him aside and she said, look, do you want me to check you out? And he had a really, really, really severe infection in his leg. Right. Yeah. So she was able to start the course of treatment, clean the wound, and start him on a course of treatment. The likely outcome for this guy was that he would end up losing the leg. He would end up in an A&E where the pain got so bad, he had to present in an A&E and lose the leg. So they're the other aspects of this facility. Yeah. It allows you to intervene.
So it's a pilot.
Pilot.
It's halfway through. It's what, 18 months, is it around?
So it's about 9 months,
halfway through.
Not far off,
And what happens at the end of that? Does somebody decide, decide whether it's going to go ahead or not?
Well, effectively, yes. But what's happening is there's an independent evaluation. OK, so we have a panel of experts who will monitor what it's delivering. So all of our engagements are recorded, our overdose prevention is recorded, the number of people who use the facility, the type of drugs they're using. All of that is collected. And then there's also a stakeholder piece where the evaluation body are talking to people who use the service, who work in the service, who live around the service. And there will be a determination based on that evaluation as to whether this becomes part of mainstream drug treatment services. Now, bear in mind, Ray, it'll only ever be an element of drug treatment services. It isn't the panacea for the drugs problem, but it is a very important element for a group of people, probably the most marginalised people who use drugs.
Okay. I've loads more I want to talk to you about. And I want to, because there's obviously crossover between what you did in Mountjoy and what you're doing now. And I'd be interested to see what you've learned now that you maybe could have applied to your previous role as Governor of Mountjoy. But we have to take a quick commercial break. We'll talk to Eddie Mullins.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We're speaking to Eddie Mullins, CEO of Merchants Quay Ireland. He's running a 5K a day for September, which is Recovery Month. And he's trying to raise awareness about recovery and harm reduction. And Eddie used to be the governor in Mountjoy. How long were you governor for?
So I was the governor for 5 years in total, but over three different occasions. So right. I was the governor of seven different prisons, actually, at different points in my career. So very lucky.
Yeah. And there's a lot of drug taking in prisons.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering now that you've spent some time in Merchants Quay, which is specifically about addiction and drug taking, have you learned anything that would, you know, inform what you did?
Yeah.
Would you do things differently? I know that's a difficult question to answer.
Well, it's not really. I mean, the difficult prison is a difficult place because, you know, trying to be a therapeutic community, but it's actually a detention community. So it's very hard, and some people put great expectations on the prison system to solve addiction, to solve drugs, but it's about detaining people who have been...
Well, it is in Ireland, but in other countries, it's about rehabilitation. And, you know, there are other models that work better.
I do agree with you. Yeah, yeah. I'm not justifying in any way. Yeah. I actually just
obviously,
believe
there is detention, there is incarceration, but there can be and should be other elements.
There should be. Yeah. I think the overcrowding situation at the moment is absolutely not helping it. So, you know, all of the resources in the prison system, and we know, like, the guards and both the prison service had struggled to recruit. Recruitment has picked up, and there certainly is signs that it's improving. But most of the resources go into managing the security of the prison. Okay, so, and it's not intentional, it's reality that rehabilitative services are probably lower down the priority list. You have to maintain security, you have to maintain good order. So the opportunity for somebody in prison to access services is not as good as it should be and not as good as it was. Mm. And it's going to take some time to get to overcome those challenges around overcrowding.
But drug taking is a problem in prisons.
Yes, it is.
And that's because a lot of people who have suffered trauma end up taking drugs, commit crimes because they're addicted, end up in prison. Is that it, or is that oversimplifying it?
No, it's not. It's as simple as that. And I suppose, you know, there's a strong debate and strong argument at the moment around decriminalization and around legalization.
How do you feel about that?
Well, you see, the problem for me is that the people who are in prison today and who are in addiction, right, decriminalizing it will have no positive bearing on those people, because most of those people who are engaged in criminal behaviour, now I'm not talking about everybody, and it's not a general statement, but there's a very significant group of people in prison who engage in criminal behaviour because they've no other way of maintaining their drug dependency. So they're still going to engage, even if it's decriminalised, they're still going to be engaging in criminal behaviour.
They still have to pay for
it. They still shoplift, they still have to handle stolen, whatever it is, or what a lot of people who are drug dependent do is they carry more than the amount of drugs for personal use. So they are the ghillie, for want of a better word. They're used to transport drugs. And so decriminalisation, legalisation will make no difference to them. Mm. Okay. So what it will do is for people who, and I hate to say this, right, because I'm being accused of being biased, anti-middle class. I'm not. But people in the middle classes who buy their drugs in clean environments and who pay cash and are not involved in any criminal behaviour, decriminalising will certainly enhance them. They won't.
But you're wrong there, Eddie.
Go on.
They're involved in criminal behaviour.
Ray, I am wrong. You're right. It is a criminal act.
Yeah.
What I mean
But it's mad that you said that.
I suppose I'm using my words wrong.
Right, okay.
So really what I mean is they're not engaging in secondary criminal behaviour.
Right.
So buying drugs is a criminal act. Absolutely they are. But they're not going into a shop and robbing to buy it.
Have you thought about, and this is important now that what we're talking about, have you thought about that, the perception of the people you work with in Merchants Quay Ireland and the people you would have worked with in prison services and the people who may have been wherever over the weekend and did cocaine or whatever.
Yeah.
Have you thought about the difference and the perception of those two groups of people?
Yeah, well, it's very interesting you asked me that, because we did a piece of research around stigma. I was talking to you about it earlier. And you know, at first glance, when you look at the research, it was done 25 years ago, and then we repeated it again. And it's a fairly extensive piece of research. And at first glance, you say, you know, attitudes are changing and it looks like people are being more acceptant of people in addiction and drug dependency. But the reality is, on the ground, the people who we work with, who are chronically dependent on drugs, who present in a particular way, who may look dishevelled, may look unclean, may be loud, right? they still experienced all of the stigma and the shame associated with drug use. But what's changing is more and more people have connections to people who take drugs. So it's no longer, so they don't want to, they don't want to say Ray Darcy is, you know, whatever, because they're related to Ray Darcy. So the shift in attitudes.
That's interesting, because
when
I read your research a few months ago, I naively thought that education was changing people's views of people who suffer with addiction. That people were informed now, they knew that maybe a lot of addiction is because of trauma, and that people were a little bit more compassionate in their views towards people with addictions. But you're saying that that's not the case.
Well, I would like to think it has changed, but not to the extent that you would think when you read the research. And the reason I say that, Ray, is because the people that we work with tell us every day the treatment they receive on the street is appalling. You know, and we hear from time to time about, you know, events where.
But you can understand why that is the case, because maybe people have suffered, you know, been mugged, or business people have suffered because they're shoplifting in their shops, cost them a lot of money. So you can understand that.
I can, and I think the solution is a couple of things. I think we need to invest in services to support people into a recovery journey. That's what Recovery Month is about. So if you and we talked about the MCIF, and it's part of a suite of supports for people. You're taking people off the street, so those that have no interest in drug treatment but they don't want to see people taking drugs, they don't have to see people taking drugs because they're now in a facility that takes them off. So that's a win for those people. But also, the more people we can support into recovery, the less that will be prevalent on the streets. And I think then the second piece then is, in some respects, it's like containment. You're trying to, people who are in drug dependent now need support. But it's the next generation. Yeah. And like you talked about, without mentioning anything, but we know that big events, like the amount of drugs that's taken at events is just off the charts. It's now becoming somewhat normalised, right? And, you know, not everybody who ended up in everybody who that I know of who ended up in addiction never started out to say, you know, I want to be drug dependent. Yeah. They started out with a little bit here, a little bit there, encouraged to take something, and maybe, you know, look, what harm will it do? And unfortunately then, for some people, it progressed out of complete control and they've lost everything.
And that's the thing. Why do you believe that is the case for some people and not others?
Experts would say, and I'm not an expert, I'm not a psychologist, but some people say people have addictive personalities. So some addictions are substituted by others. You know, I know a lot of people who are addicted to the gym and they might have been gambling or whatever beforehand. So we know that is an element of it. But I think for the people that we work with, it's very much rooted in trauma. It's early childhood trauma, poverty, you know. And if you think, like, we had the homeless figures, for example, last week, 5,000 children.
And this is, like, I nearly cried when I read that over the weekend. And the effect that that's going, the long-term effect that that's going to have on those children.
That's exactly it, Ray. I think what the point that we're missing, and you know, we talk about, and unfortunately, we're politicising the homeless figures. So you have politicians just arguing with each other, and that really is not what's required here. It really requires a collective approach, because it can be dealt with. It's not impossible to deal with. But the point you make there is so important. The long-term trauma on the children is going to, and it's going to create the next unfortunate, next group of people who will end up in drug dependency.
Yeah.
Because it's
horrendous. There's a cycle. There's a cycle. And if you were born into a family where there's addiction, you're more likely to be addicted yourself.
You are.
So how
you're certainly more, there's a greater chance.
Yeah, there's a greater chance. So how do we, as a society then, put in measures to prevent that happening? How do we put in measures to break that cycle of addiction?
Well, it's very, very complex, and I think what we need to do. It needs money. It needs investment. It needs. And one of the things that we've learned in the last couple of years is peer involvement. So there's nothing better, for example, than having somebody with a lived experience actually talking to people about, look, this is not a beautiful life. This is not. And we in the prison service, you know, over the last few years, developed a really good peer-led model. It's not going to change it, but it's part of an approach. So, like, I going into a school, for example, speaking passionately about, it's not going to resonate with a 13-year-old.
They want to hear firsthand.
They want to hear firsthand.
They want to hear the gory details.
You know, and I think we like, we can't underestimate our young people's ability to absorb stuff, right? They do it all the time on social media, right? So to think that we, you know, we maybe protect them by not presenting how stark the situation is. No, we need to be very honest, open and upfront. The drug situation is out of control. It's getting worse. It's been normalised. Like, you know, you hear of anecdotally of football teams, GAA teams, any sort of team, you know, they don't take alcohol because there's an alcohol ban, but they take cocaine. Mm. Now, I can't say, you know, I'm not speaking from experience, but there's lots of anecdotal evidence of, you know, cocaine is clean. What harm will it do? It's a class A drug. It's highly addictive. It's extremely dangerous. So there's no way you can justify, you know, you won't have a hangover. You won't have
anything. And here's the thing, I was thinking about this, you know, because if you look at the tobacco industry, and you know, people smoked because they thought it was cool in the 50s and 60s and 70s, and now it's the tobacco industry pariah. There's a lot of people talking about the alcohol industry, and there's a bit of backlash there against the alcohol industry. But there is no establishment when it comes to drugs. There's nobody we can target. There's nobody we can address.
Exactly. And, you know, and it's funny. And don't ask me where I stand at this rate, because I don't know, right? But the reality is, if things are regulated, there is an opportunity. Like, for all the criticism of the tobacco industry and for all the criticism of the alcohol, and there's plenty of them, and, you know, there's lots of experts, medical experts will talk about the damage both do. And it's you can't refute it. It's there. It's obvious. They see it every day. But at least you can, as you say, you can have a pop at an organisation or group. You can say, you can argue. You can't bring in the drug lords and sit down and argue and say, look, this is the damage you're doing. You can't. So there is that absolute gap. And like the money, if you think about, law enforcement will say across the world, they get about 10% of the drugs that are in circulation. And I did a quick check there recently. And I think this year alone in Ireland, there's about 250,000 worth of drugs came into Ireland. Now, some of them might
quarter
be
a billion.
Quarter of a billion. Yeah, yes. Quarter of a billion. 250 million, right? Yeah. So that's 10% of it, right? That's potentially 250 billion worth of drugs. Yeah. So 2.5 billion worth of drugs circulating in Ireland at any given time. Mm. Now, that isn't specifically for the people who use our service. Right. That's for the...
Back to Merchants Key Ireland. I'm a bit sad that you have drilled into those statistics and that it's not a sign of compassion. It's just a sign that drug use has been normalised. So what sort of reaction do you get from people? I suppose you surround yourself with people who agree with you, I would imagine. There's a lot of negativity, isn't there? And there's still a huge stigma. And people think that you're an addict because that's the way you are. You're flawed. You're a flawed human being. We're all flawed.
Right. There's 2 points. I'd say you're right. There is that approach. What I have, and I've been very heartened by this, is since I went into Merchants Key, I'm 2 years in the role now, and I've engaged lots of people and been out and about. And there is a genuine compassion, but people don't know how to place their compassion. Right. So they will say, oh God, it's terrible. And they genuinely mean it. But they still struggle then when they meet somebody on the street, they avoid them, they step over them. You know, the survey talked about fear. There is a fear among the general population when they come across somebody who is drug dependent or is drug affected. You know, are they going to attack me? There is that fear, right? So, you know, what I try to do when I talk is say, the people that I work with, they are not pariahs. You know, they are people with serious problems and more consumed. I think you saw it this morning. You got a flavour. We went into open access, which is our open area. And you see people, and they're really more consumed in themselves.
Yeah.
Like they saw you and I briefly, but they just turned back into themselves because they're not really the danger to society that people think they are. There are pockets and there are situations where people are attacked on the street.
But then there's the criminal element, you know what I mean? Which feeds that 2.5 billion industry.
And they're not the people that we generally pick up.
They're not the people that you're helping. Right. Merchants Key Ireland and Eddie Mullins is running 5K a day to raise awareness about Recovery Month. And it's about harm reduction. Eddie, thanks so much for coming
in.
Good luck with the rest of the month.
Thank you.
Quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.